Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor. Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Now, when people say you got to network to be successful in life, right? Successful in your career, people really don't know what that means. Like when they do network, they usually do it in a way that's sort of not effective, where they just take business cards and just hand them out to anyone and everyone who will take one. They'll go to these networking events and just hand out their business card and just talk about themselves and say, here's my idea. Let's network and let's do lunch. And it never really goes anywhere. And it seems a lot of people, because they had such bad experiences with networking, they just give up on it because they think it's a waste of time. Well, our guest today has spent his career mastering, studying how to be a better networker. His name is John Corcoran. He is an attorney, but he also owns a website called Smart Business Revolution, where he writes content, has a podcast about how to be an effective networker so you have more success, not only in your career, but also in your personal life. John is also a regular contributor on The Art of Manliness. You've probably seen some of his articles on our site about networking and, you know, social skills and things like that. They always do really well on the site. So today we're going to talk about how to be an effective networker and how to do it in a way that it's not annoying, it doesn't seem sleazy, it's comfortable for all those who are involved, and how to do it in a way that it actually make a difference in your life and the life of the other person. We're going to talk about how you can systemize your networking so you can keep track of all your contacts. We'll discuss why even if you have a quote-unquote blue-collar job, you should also be networking, because you often associate networking with sort of office, white-collar jobs. And we'll also discuss why college-age men who are still in college, still in school, should start networking now so they can have more opportunities presented to them when they get out into the workforce. So just a podcast that's just jam-packed with actionable information. I think you're really going to enjoy this, so let's get on with the show. John Corcoran, welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Brett.
Hey, well, it's a pleasure. You've been a contributor for The Art of Manliness for a while now, so we've always enjoyed your content there, and it's nice to get you on the podcast to actually talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I've listened for a long time, so I'm happy to be here.
So before we get into talking about your expertise, which is networking, you kind of have a really interesting background, because right now you're an attorney, and you also run your website, Smart Business Revolution. But before that, you worked in the Clinton administration, and you were like the Office of Letters and Management, right? Like, letters and messages. Can you describe what that job was, and how old were you when you got that job, and how did you land a job? And
I was 12 years old actually. I was 23, and yeah, I was a writer in presidential letters and messages. I kind of describe it as, I was like a second tier speechwriter, or, you know, if like one of the speechwriters pulled a hamstring, then we'd have to step in basically. We wrote like everything that the speechwriters didn't want to write, like letters, messages, video scripts, proclamations, which are kind of of a historic importance and people pay less attention to them now. You know, letters to VIPs, that kind of thing. And I had previously been in the speechwriting office during college. Actually, during college, I did an internship in the White House speechwriting office in the fall of '97, which was right before the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal hit. And I went back, graduated from college, kept in touch with people, and I can get into the whole story of how I ended up getting a job there, but ended up coming back and getting a job when I was 23.
So, was it networking that landed you that job?
Better believe it, yeah. So it was basically keeping in touch with you know, the other speechwriters who were there, other people who worked at the White House, keeping in touch with people in Washington, D.C. What happened was I'd graduated from college. I knew I'd like to get a job back there at the White House, but not everyone who interns is able to get a job there. They take, you know, hundreds and hundreds of interns each year, and there are not a lot of people who get those coveted jobs at the White House. So I was on the lookout for it. But, you know, you can't just, like, pester people regularly, like send them emails or call them and say, so is there a job? Is there a job? So, you know, I just tried to be of use to the speechwriters. I would clip out things and send things to them, you know, speeches that I saw that I thought were helpful or quotes or articles, you know, just keeping in touch with people and trying to be of use to them. And then what happened was, it's kind of a funny story. I heard from one of the speechwriters that there was this job opening for a writer. And I'd been an English major in college and I'd been a writer my entire life. So I wanted to be a writer. So I was very excited about it. And so I knew I might be getting a call one of these days from the person who was hiring for it. And so one day I do get this call out of the blue from the woman who eventually ended up hiring me. And she calls me up and says, yeah, you know, just wanted to see if I get a resume and a writing sample and find some more information about you. And I said, sure, that's great. I'll send you my resume. And actually, if you want to see a writing sample, you can open up today's New York Times. I have a letter to the editor in today's op-ed page of the New York Times. It was a bit of a coincidence, but I knew that they might be calling around them and I'd sent that letter to the editor a couple of days earlier. It just happened to hit on the very same day that I got that phone call. And the reason I tell that story is because if you have an opportunity that's coming along, then you can position yourself. You can do things in order to create opportunities for yourself so that you, you know, look the best that you can. You put your best foot forward, so to speak. So after that, I ended up interviewing for the job, doing a writing test, all that kind of stuff, and ended up getting into the job.
Okay, so you started mastering networking at a pretty young age. Now you're an attorney, but you also have your website, Smart Business Revolution.
Yeah.
And where you talk about networking, and why did you decide like to devote an entire blog to networking and teaching people about it?
I'd love to say that there's like this master plan behind it, but it was more of an evolution. So what happened was I've always written for the web. I've always enjoyed writing. And so I started blogging years and years ago, and it kind of evolved. And what happened was I would write related to my legal practice because I'm a lawyer. I'm still a practicing lawyer. And my clients are mostly entrepreneurs and small business owners. And I would write for that audience. And eventually I realized that writing about legal topics was too disorganized. People would come and go. There was no way of creating a sense of community or anything like that. So I pivoted, I rebranded, I changed it, and I started writing more aimed towards entrepreneurs. But I also found that at that point it was too broad. Also, I was talking about a lot of different topics that were of interest to entrepreneurs, but not narrowly focused enough. And at the same time, actually, Antonio Centino was one of the big influencers who also writes for Art of Manliness. He kept on saying to me, you're really good at using relationships and knowing how to develop relationships with people. You should do more on that. You should tell people more about that. And another of other friends had done the same thing. They said, you know, they'd constantly asking me questions about, you know, networking, building relationships, that sort of thing. And so finally, it's like one of those things. You got to listen to what other people say. And sometimes I think we're drawn to the thing that we struggle with more rather than the thing that we're better at. And so eventually I pivoted and I started focusing more on, as I call it, relationship building. And that's when things really kind of started to pick up for me.
Okay. So let's talk about that. Like you're calling it relationship building. Most people would call it networking. And yeah, I think most people, when they hear the word networking, they're like, that sounds, I just, they just put up, the, like, that sucks. That's so lame.
Yeah.
Like they, images of like, you know, networking events in like hotel lobbies where they're handing out, you know, their business card and like shaking hands and giving their elevator pitches. That's what comes to mind.
Yep.
I mean, what are the biggest myths about networking, and what would you tell someone who's like, yeah, that's stupid. I'm not going to network or relationship build. Doesn't matter if you rebranded relationship building, I'm not going to do that. What would you tell them to, you know, convince them that you need to start doing this?
Yeah. So, I think it does have a negative connotation. I think exactly because there's so many people that do it wrong. There's so many people that turn it into a sales pitch immediately, you know, and we've all been in that situation where we're at some event and we meet some person and they're immediately trying to sell us on something. And that's not the way to do it anywhere in any circumstances. In any circumstances, when you meet someone, you got to take some time to get to know them. I mean, it takes a while for these things to unfold, you know, whether we're talking about building a relationship through someone through the media or online or offline or in person or whatever, it takes a while. And so the people who do networking bad, and the reason that networking has a bad connotation is because of people who try and force it, try and make it happen too quickly. I advocate a slower approach. I mean, I could even call it slow networking or something like that. Maybe that's a word I need to use, is because honestly, you need to take some time to build a relationship with someone. And how do you do that? You do that by being of use to them, being a friend, being useful, providing value to them. And we can get into what that means exactly. But as far as what networking myths are, what common networking myths are out there, well, one I think is a big myth is that you don't need to do it. The fact is, we're all building relationships, we're adding people into our lives, and we're dropping people into our lives over the course of our life. So over the next 12 months, whether you like it or not, you will add some people into your network and you'll drop some people into your network. It just happens organically. What I advocate is taking a more proactive approach, a more deliberate and intentional approach, and actually thinking in advance, much like you would choose a major in college, thinking in advance about the types of people that you want to surround yourself with, the types of people that you want to develop a relationship with, rather than just letting it happen completely organically, which is what a lot of people do. I'm not talking about friendship, of course. When it comes to friends, it's fine to let things evolve organically. But when it comes to business, when it comes to your career, I think you should be more intentional about it. The other common networking myth that I think we hear really frequently is that either you're born good at it or you're not born good at it, and so you don't do it. I actually think that you can get better at it. And some introverts are very good at quote-unquote networking, very good at building relationships, you know, and it's because they put effort into it. And really, building a network is not about being the most outspoken, most effusive, most social animal, social butterfly at a networking event. It's really about building relationships with people in that initial meeting and then following up and continuing to follow up with that person and keeping them in your life. And, you know, like one other example I give is oftentimes people, they say, I don't like going out to networking events, and that's fine. But this is what people end up doing. They go because people have to go because you have to build relationships. You can't just live like a hermit in your home at all times. So they go to events, but they don't follow up with people. They just let it drop. And what that does is like dooming yourself to the hamster wheel of networking for the rest of your life. Because you don't take relationships, the relationships that you do develop at events, and you don't do anything with them, you end up having to go back again and again and again to all these different events. So even though you don't like it, you're dooming yourself to continue to do it. So I think being intentional on the front end, deciding in advance who you want to develop relationships with, and then on the back end, after you've met people, continuing to be in touch with them and continuing to remain in touch with them, with the people who are really of value to your career, to your business, are the two real big important points there.
Okay. I thought it was a really interesting point. You said you don't have to be an extrovert to network well, because I think a lot of people stay away from networking because they're like, oh, it frightens them. Like, I got to go and like talk to these strangers and I have a minute, right, to make that first impression. It's going to be like, if I don't get the deal there, if I don't get the job interview offer there, then it's all done for.
Right.
So just like, there's so much pressure. Like, they're already sort of like, you know, have social anxiety, and then just the scepter of having to like make something happen in that this one moment just like makes it even more anxiety producing thing even more.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. People put too much pressure on themselves. And the reality is that it's a lot longer process than that. Yeah, I don't think you need to worry about getting everything smushed into the initial meeting. You can actually – that can take a little bit of the pressure off. In fact, one of the tools that I advocate that people use is called a conversations list. And a conversations list is basically just taking the time to define in advance – the 50-plus people who you'd like to develop a relationship and deepen a relationship with over the course of the next 12 months. And there's a couple of things I do intentionally there. I call it a conversations list because I want you to think about it as an ongoing conversation with you're going to have, which you're going to have with these 50 people over the course of the next 12 months. The reason I say 12 months is because that way you don't worry about trying to get everything accomplished in the first meeting or the first couple of weeks. You realize you can take your time with that. And if you do that over time, over the course of a couple of years, you can really radically revamp the circle of people that you have around you, which is something that I've just done naturally throughout my career. Looking back on my career now, and I realize that I did it over and over again. I did it in politics. I actually worked in the entertainment industry. I was an early employee for DreamWorks. So I worked for both Bill Clinton and Steven Spielberg at different times in my career. After that, I went and worked in Silicon Valley for a couple of years. And now, of course, I'm an attorney and I depend on relationships in order to get clients. So I've actually done it over and over again with these different types of circles. But if you, let's say you're listening to this and you're not happy in the job that you have right now, or not happy in the career that you have right now, or you want to start a business or something like that, you can evolve your circle of connections around you by being deliberate and intentional, using a tool like the conversations list and deciding who are the people that you want to develop relationships with, and then going out and doing it proactively.
So you decide you want to, you know, be proactive and network and do all that stuff. But how do you do it in a way that's not annoying, right? And that it just doesn't, you know, just doesn't, because like, I mean, I get approached all the time with people who want something with, like, they want to work with the Art of Manliness and they want to network, but like it's a lot of times it's just very annoying. Like they just, ask. And it's like, I only have so much time and energy, so I can't give myself all, you know, to these people. So like, how do you do it in a way where it's just like, it's useful, like, as you say?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'd recommend is checking out the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which a lot of people have heard of, but a lot of people haven't read. So I'd recommend reading that book. The book is almost 100 years old, and yet the reason it sold tens of millions of copies is because the advice in it is timeless. And the advice is that if you're meeting someone, if you're developing a relationship with someone, to be attuned to what they're interested in and to be inquisitive and to learn about that person. So that's the first thing that I think that you should do you should be doing when you're developing a relationship with someone. You should be learning what is going on in their life, learning about them, learning what their interests are, learning what's going on with their family if they want to share that, learning what their goals are. And only once you learn those things can you not be annoying. I mean, the people who are annoying are the people who are just interested in themselves, right? In Dale Carnegie's book, there's a number of classic examples, but there's an example of a guy who goes to a dinner party and he ends up having this conversation with, I think it was a biologist or marine biologist or something like that. And he has this great conversation, and the person was asking questions of the biologist all night, like question after question, because he'd never met a biologist before and he was really interested in the topic. And he was using the Dale Carnegie strategies, which is to ask questions of people. And then at the end of the night, the biologist goes to the host and says, you know, I had this great conversation with this guy. He was a great conversationalist. And what's so funny about that is that the guy who was asking questions wasn't really making conversation. He was actually just asking questions and taking interest in that person. And most people really enjoy talking about themselves, and they really enjoy talking about things that are of interest to them. So the lesson in that is you don't need to be the world's greatest conversationalist. You just need to take an interest in that person and then to pick up on details about them, what's going on in their life, and then find ways in which you can add value to that person's life. You know, and so what I try and do when I meet someone new is just try and find out what's going on with them, what's going on with their business, what's going on with their life. Do they have a son or daughter who's about to go off to college? Maybe I can give them some advice on colleges that they're considering. Do they have a favorite type of food? Maybe there's a restaurant that they haven't heard of nearby that I can recommend to them. Maybe they're going on vacation sometime next month to some place that I've been to before. Like Brett, you and I have both been to Vermont on vacation. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're going to Vermont. We can give some recommendation of somewhere they can go to in Vermont. You know, something like that. I think that is the way that you ensure that you're not annoying.
Okay. But even when you start, the whole goal is to provide value, be useful in any way, right? But I guess there's a point, like, you shouldn't like provide value and then like, hey, if follow up with, can you help me out with this? Like sort of the give and take. I mean, should you just be more like give stuff and then wait? Like, how do you know when you call in that favor? I mean, it sounds very like Godfather mafioso, but like, how do you know when it's a good time to, you know, capitalize on this relationship that you're developing?
Yeah, I think it varies with each person and with each relationship. You know, if you develop a tighter bond with that person, then they're probably more likely quicker to come to you for whatever service it is you provide or think of you. I think that you need to weave into the conversation things that are helpful, but that are also remind the person of what it is you do. So if you're a service provider like myself, then one thing you can do is just provide helpful advice. So let's say that you're a photographer listening to this and you want to get photography clients. Well, you could just weave in advice and tips. Like maybe you're talking to someone who you've met and they just, you know, they mentioned that they just had pictures taken, formal portraits or something. Maybe you can give a little tip. Like you can say, oh, by the way, you know, it's fall right now. So the colors are, you know, browns and oranges and greens. So, you know, before you have your photo session, you should try and wear a sweater that matches that palette if you do an outside photo shoot. You know, that's one way that you could be of use to that person. And it's not saying, like, hire me to be your photographer. It's actually the opposite. It's actually just being useful to them. And if you prove that worth, if you prove that you're so useful, then that they're going to immediately think of you. Either they're going to think, wow, we should really hire this person. They gave me this great piece of advice, which is a really good tip. Or if they have a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, something like that, some friend who needs to hire a photographer, even if they don't hire you, they might refer you out to that person.
That sounds an awfully like what's that, from Miracle on 34th Street, where like Macy's was like recommending customers go to Gimbel's if there's like a cheaper price or something like that. Do you remember that scene?
And I've heard people reference that before, and I haven't seen that movie in so long, but I should check it out.
Yeah, you should check it out. I think it's very similar. So like, yeah, the Santa Claus at Macy's starts telling parents like where they can go buy presents that weren't at Macy's. And like at first, like the managers were like, oh, why are you doing that? But all the customers loved it. They're like, oh, you know, thank you so much for doing that. And I'm going to keep coming back to Macy's because you guys are so useful.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the Nordstrom's approach. Nordstrom's is famous for providing amazing customer service and to the point where they will provide all kinds of recommendations. Or Zappos, a more modern contemporary reference. Zappos is famous for, if they don't have the shoes, their customer service people are trained to get on the web and start helping to find people where the shoes can be bought. But I think there's truth to that. I think that, you know, that establishes credibility. That establishes trust. When you do something like that, it shows that you have confidence in your own skills, that you're not worried about the competition. In fact, for me as an attorney, I found that the clients that are most likely to become really attached to me are the ones that I've tried to talk out of hiring me in the first place. You know, I've had, you know, conversations where I explain why they shouldn't hire me for whatever reason, maybe because I don't think they should pursue a certain path, or maybe I think there's another attorney can help them with something. And then it's inevitably they turn around and they're like, oh, we really want to hire you. You know, it's like, yeah, I guess you weren't listening, or else like you'd rather hire me. That's fine.
All right. So I guess the key to networking, or as you call it, relationship building, is first pay attention to the needs of others. Right. Be attuned to that.
Yes.
And then second, just find small ways to add value in any way you can. And even if that means referring them to someone else or to competition, or even if they don't use your service immediately, be valuable. Here's the question I have. How do you make time for that? Right. Because like, you only have so much time in the day. You only have so much energy. And if you're spending all that time helping others who, you know, you might not be able, you know, this is, you're thinking about your business, right? You're making an investment in your business and they might not, you know, might not have any return on investment at all or for a long time. I mean, how do you manage that? How do you decide, okay, I'm going to spend my time helping this person as opposed to not helping that person?
Yeah. And this is a common objection that I hear from people, that are worried about the amount of time that it takes. You know, I don't advocate taking a ton of time, spending hours and hours of your day devoting to this. Really, it can be very not time consuming. One of the problems is, and the reason I advocate using conversations list strategy is that people are developing relationships with the wrong people. Sometimes it's because they're pursuing someone who they see is successful and they're trying to build a relationship with that person when there's no conceivable value to them, or they're not aligned with their business goal, or they're not aligned with their career goals. So they're just pursuing the wrong person. So I think taking the time to define who are the people that you want to build relationships with will help to prevent that from happening. And then you'll focus on building the relationships with the people who really matter to your goals. But I think you need to take the long game. You need to decide that I'm going to devote a little bit of time throughout my week to doing these sorts of relationship building activities, you know, going to coffee with someone or going to lunch with someone or connecting with them, interviewing. I mean, what we're doing right now is a great tool for building relationships, interviewing someone, whether it's for a podcast or whether it's for an article that you write in the newspaper. It's a lot better than asking someone for an informational interview, which is actually asking them for a favor. Mm-hmm. Doing an interview where you're going to publish it to a podcast, to an article, to a blog or whatever, is actually not asking them to do a favor. You're actually doing something nice for them because you're giving them a bit of publicity. But there are also tools that you can use. And one that I advocate is called a CRM program. It stands for Customer Relationship Management. And typically, historically, salespeople use them because they were for building relationships with people. Well, as our economy has become more entrepreneur focused and jobs have become more temporary, people tend to jump from job to job, from company to company now, whereas people used to stick with the same job. It's more important that you put effort into building these relationships if you want to be serious about your career. So you can use a CRM program, which are a relatively modest investment. You know, they can be anywhere from, you know, $0 to $100 a month. You think of like Salesforce, Zoho, Podio. There's a bunch of new ones out there. Insightly. I use one called Contactually, which I'm a big fan of. And like they have a suite of basically different tools that are involved. But I'll just mention one of them is like introductions. I love doing introductions to people because anyone who's listening to this right now, I guarantee you there are two people in your network who would benefit from knowing each other. And you are the one who can do it. And if you introduce two people and they get along, they hit it off, they do business together or whatever, they will always remember it. And then that is a great way for you to get introduced to other people as well. So Contactually, and probably every CRM out there, has a tool for doing introductions where you can, in a couple of clicks, like very quickly, make an introduction. It's some of the best use of your time, period. Because if you make an introduction, they hit it off, just people are just tremendously grateful. So that's one tool that you can use that would be helpful. There's another one called intros.to, which is another website, which is actually free. I think it's an open source platform for tracking introductions is another one you can use.
It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million bucks, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code manliness to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code manliness. Check it out today. Have you always struggled with finding time to manage your finances? At the end of a busy week, the last thing you want to do is spend time budgeting all of your expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions you no longer use. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. My favorite feature on Rocket Money is finding those unwanted subscriptions. If you're like me, you have a bunch of those things you signed up for but forgot about, streaming services, newsletters, maybe some fitness plans. You just connect your account to the app, Rocket Money finds the recurring subscription fees, and then you can easily cancel them from the app. It's a really cool, cool service. They also have a service that can help you lower your bill. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. That's a lot of money. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. There have been a lot of amazing people as guests on this podcast, but what if you want to go deeper? If you're looking somewhere to learn from the most remarkable people, that's Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, and they have over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. For example, Chris Voss has a class on negotiation, Jocko Willink has a class on leadership, and Malcolm Gladwell has a class on writing. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. One class that I've really enjoyed is the one with Chris Voss on negotiation. My favorite lesson in that class was the lesson on tactical empathy, something we talked about in the podcast that we did with him a long time ago, but he goes in deeper with this. And besides just the lectures, you get exercises so you can actually put this stuff into practice. Right now, listeners will get an additional 15% off annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. Masterclass.com/AOM.
Speaking of, like systems you can use, I mean, you, to be really effective with this, you need to systemize and organize your networking. Besides, organizing your introductions, I mean, what else should you be keeping track of, with your relationship building?
What else should be keeping? Well, one big one is, and this really is dependent on, what it is you do. So if you are this works best probably for a service provider, someone who's providing a service and just trying to get clients. But I have a tool that I talk about. It's in a free ebook on my site, called the tool is called the Results and Revenue Worksheet. And basically it's basically tracking all of the incoming, business that comes into you and where it came from. And this is a tool that over time you can see patterns emerge. So let's say we'll use the photographer example again, or let's say you're a plumber or something like that, and you get phone calls throughout the year from different people, new clients. Well, every time a new client comes in, you just write down the name of the person who came in and what their source was. It could be from a person who referred them. It could be from an organization that you belong to, like a BNI or something like that, or a Chamber of Commerce. Or it could be an event that you attended, like a conference or some kind of quarterly event or something like that. Or it could be from your kid's preschool, whatever. You write it down. Over time, you'll be able to see patterns emerge. You'll be able to see that, oh, hey, look, this one person referred me 3 times back in March, and they haven't referred me since then. Well, what has happened in the interim? Oh, well, it turns out I haven't communicated with that person in the last 6 months. So what that tells you is you need to really reach out to that person again and make sure that you keep a strong connection with that person. This isn't rocket science, but if you implement a strategy like that, it will help you to be efficient and to be smart about the relationships that are really important to your business, to your career.
Okay. Let's go back to introductions, because this is something you and I have talked about in emails back and forth before. Like, what's the etiquette of introduction making? Because I have lots of people who make introductions to me all the time. I know they're trying to be useful, but oftentimes what happens is that the person that they're introducing me to, like, there's just, I don't see any value. Like, I just, there's nothing there. Like, I'm like, this isn't a good fit. And so it's always awkward. It's like, nice to meet you, but no thanks. Cause I don't want to seem like I'm a jerk. Right.
Yeah.
Should you ask before, like, you say, can I introduce you to someone, or should you just make the introduction?
Yeah. It's funny, cause you and I have talked about this, and my opinion on it has evolved a little bit. Initially, I did feel like, you know, just go out there and make the introductions. And if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit. But then after talking to you about it, talking to some other people about it, and also, honestly, I get more introductions now than I did a couple of months ago, than I did a year ago. And so I've been on the other end of those as well, where you get an introduction and you're kind of like, I'm not sure what, you know, why this benefits. You know, that's kind of on the other person. It's the person who's doing the introduction. They're the one who's, you know, a little not attuned to what it is you need. And there's a couple things you could do. You could email back or just say to the other person who's done the introduction to you, this is kind of what I'm looking for right now. I'm looking for, you know, or this is what I'm working on. This is what I'm focused on, so that they don't make the same mistake again later. You can do it in a polite way.
Sure.
Another thing you can do is if you get an introduction to someone where you can't really see what the benefit is, what the value is to you, you can just say, great to meet you, and how can I help? Or if there's any way I can help, just let me know. And it might be something tiny. You know, even if you can't see any benefit from that person whatsoever, at least initially, just based on their vocation or whatever it is they do, maybe they have some tiny little question. Maybe they have some tiny little request that takes very little amount of your time. And actually, there's a great strategy. It's called the 5-minute favor. There's a guy named Adam Rifkin who was named by Fortune magazine as their best networker of 2011, I think. And he does what he calls a 5-minute favor, which basically, if anyone asks him for a favor, he'll do it as long as it takes less than 5 minutes. And so sometimes, I'm not saying you have to commit 5 minutes, but it could be 30 seconds. I mean, like, sometimes people will, it turns out they just have some like tiny little question. And with you, Brett, I mean, you have the advantage of, you've been putting out advice for 5-6 years now, and a lot of your advice is out there. So someone might ask you a question, and you probably answered it in 2,000 words or more, you know, at some point in the last 5 years. And so you can think off the top of your head, you know, I know exactly where the answer is to this, and you could send an article to that person. That doesn't take much of your time, but you never know what will come from that result. You know, that person might be so grateful from that personal touch, you know, from getting that from you, that then they go and refer their next 20 friends to read Art of Manliness every month. You know, so that's how I would probably approach it. But I do agree with you that I think that you have to perceive on the – first, you have to be attuned to what the other people need. And anytime you make an induction, it needs to be mutual. It needs to be – there's benefit to both sides. That's what I always try and do. I don't know if it always works out, but that's what I always try to do. And then the other thing is, I also try and judge how busy the other people are. And the busier the person, the more likely I'm going to send an email in advance that says, hey, I'd like to introduce you to so-and-so. Here's why I think it could be a benefit to you. Would you like me to make that introduction? If not, no harm, no foul. And I've done that with you. I've done that with lots of other people before. And it takes a little bit more of your effort. But even if you don't actually make the introduction, the person that you've offered to make the introduction to is grateful that you offered to make the introduction. Even if they respond and say, that's okay, I don't think I need the introduction, I think that they're still grateful that you put out the gesture that you wanted to make the introduction.
Okay. Here's another question that I have. So you're putting yourself out there. You're trying to build relationships, add value. How do you deal with like rejection, right? Like someone says, no, thank you, I don't want your help. Because I'm sure that happens a lot, right? And for some people or for some guys, that could be like sort of devastating because for whatever reason, right? What's your advice on handling rejection in the networking process?
Yeah, that's tough. It's part of the process. I mean, you have to recognize that you're going to experience some rejection and you're going to have to be a bit resilient. There could be a number of reasons why you're experiencing rejection or why someone doesn't. Oftentimes the rejection doesn't come in the form of, no, sorry, I'm not interested in meeting you. It might come in the form of them not responding to your email. You send an email and you don't receive a response, which there could be a lot of different reasons for that. It could be the person just is really busy. It could be their business is busy. It could be they have some personal thing going on in their life. You never know what's going on in someone's life. So the first thing I would say is don't take it personally. You know, a lot of people receive a lot of email, or they just are very busy, or the timing isn't right. I mean, oftentimes it's just the timing's not right for you at that time or with that person. You can't expect every connection to be dynamite. You know, even if it's someone who maybe you're really excited about meeting or really excited about the potential of getting to know, you know, maybe that person has lots and lots of people in their life of the category that you fall into. So, you know, getting back to like if you're a photographer, maybe that person has lots of photographers in their life. And so they just don't have a need for another photographer in their life. And so, you know, you got to take the approach of, well, it won't always work out. Or maybe, you know, I've had lots of great relationships work out where the first time we connected, for whatever reason on my side or their side, the timing was not right. Something was going on in one of our lives where we didn't make the connection. And then something happens later, you circle back a month or two later, you email each other once again, or you meet at another event, and then a nice relationship blossoms. So take the long game, like I mentioned earlier, take the long game and realize that sometimes there are going to be little minor setbacks, and the timing might just not be right.
Okay. So a lot of our listeners are in college or in grad school. How can college-age guys start networking now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I know because I get a lot of emails from college-age guys after I write articles. So I hear this a lot. And I got a great example. There's a guy who's in college who emailed me a couple of months ago. I think it was after reading one of my articles on Art of Manliness, and said, I'm interested in developing a relationship with the president of my school. And so they have open office hours. So I was just going to go in and introduce myself. What should I talk about? And it was kind of funny. It was like, okay. And first of all, I was like, good for you for doing that. I mean, I guarantee you this president's probably sitting in the office hours and very few people take the initiative to come in and introduce themselves. And then the second thing I said is, think about what perspective you can provide that can be of help to that president. And you'd be surprised. There's probably a lot you can do. And so I said, think about, you know, maybe there's some initiative that president is really passionate about on that campus that they want to get going. Or maybe they just want some feedback from what the pulse of the students is. They want to know what the word is on the street, so to speak, in the college. They want to know, you know, what it's like, or maybe they're interested in what if we were to, you know, do bands in the plaza at lunch on Fridays? Would that go over well? Is it worth the investment? Would that improve morale? You know, something like that. And so I said, go in with an attitude of that and just offer, you know, to be a liaison to the students or to inform the president about things that are going on that the president might not know about. So this guy ends up going and doing that and emails me a couple of months later and said it went fabulously. They ended up having this great conversation, and the president, you know, wanted a ton of feedback on these exact things that we talked about. So you might have more perspective than you think, and you can do the same thing out in the real world, where you can provide perspective to people, you know, basically on you know, what your view of the world is. The other thing I would offer is, again, introductions. Getting back to introductions, no matter how much you think your network isn't worth anything, there probably is someone that you know already, even if you're in college, who you can introduce to someone else. You don't need to start with your dad's friend who's a partner at a big law firm downtown. You know, you can probably start smaller. You can start with a couple of people within your network. Just start the practice of, it turns out that, you know, my friend who goes to this other college, you know, maybe you got a friend who went to UCLA and another friend who went to UCLA, and it turns out that they don't know each other, and you can introduce them. That's it. You could start by doing that, and then you can build it as a practice throughout your life and just continue doing that. Eventually, you work your way up the scale. Eventually, you find yourself introducing more and more people at higher and higher levels. And I mean, I've had amazing results from introducing people. I've had people start businesses together. I've received emails from people. I had an email from a guy a couple of months ago who I'd introduced to someone else. He said, I probably got $10,000 out of that introduction because we did business together. And I get that sort of thing, and I am just so glad. And then the second thing I say is, great, next round of drinks is on you.
Yeah, and that's a really, I mean, just find ways to be, I'm sure even though you're in college, you can probably find ways to be useful for people that, you know, you want to work for eventually, or within the, you know, university administration. Do you know Charlie Hohen, I think is his name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's really good at this too.
Yeah, like he's the big advocate. This is what he did with his, like when he was in college, he basically like worked for free for these big tech people, right? And he ended up landing a job being like Tim Ferriss's body man, basically. And he did really well, like made a lot of money from it. But it all started with just like being useful. He just says like, email out of the blue, here, I want to help you with this. There you go. I'll do it for free.
Yeah, and I mean, oftentimes it's just being aware of what's going on with them. So with Charlie Hohen, I think he might have connected with Tim around the time of one of his books launching. But, you know, if you know someone has a book coming out, there's a lot of things you can do. You can help to promote it. You can introduce them to other people who might buy it. I just thought of another example of someone in college who contacted me, probably through another Art of Manliness post. This is a guy who was in a band. He was in a band, and he wanted to do more his band to do more gigs in the local concert venues around the college town that he lived in. And he said, what do I have to offer these people who own these concert venues around town? What benefit can I provide to them? And I said, well, you are a student at the college. They want to get more students into their venues. So maybe what you could do is you could do a profile feature. You could interview the owner of one of these venues, interview them and write a profile and then publish it in the local newspaper. They'd probably love that. If you go and do that, then you're building a relationship with that particular venue owner, and they're probably, you know, next question after that's probably going to be, so what's going on with you? And you're like, oh, by the way, I have a band, and you know, and pretty soon you've got a gig, right? So, you know, thinking from their perspective, oftentimes we have more assets at our disposal than we think we do.
Okay, what about guys who are in blue collar jobs? Because we often think of networking as sort of like this white, you know, middle manager thing that you do. How can blue collar guys use networking to improve their career?
Yeah, I think it starts with what your goal is. So what you want to do with your career, and blue collar runs the gamut. It can be a lot of different types of jobs, but if you're self-employed and you want to get more customers, then it's going to be one kind of goal. Or if you're working in an organization, maybe you're a mechanic and you want to work your way up to head mechanic, then that's going to be a different set of goals. I think it starts with the conversations strategy that I talked about. Another thing you can do is create a conversations list of the organizations that you could join that would be helpful to your vocation as well. So let's say you're an apprentice learning to be an electrician or a plumber or something like that. Well, there are probably organizations in your local community where you could build relationships that would be helpful to that career, help you work your way up the ladder and get more income. So you could brainstorm a list of 10 different organizations that you could join. It could be like a local chamber of commerce. It could be like a BNI group, Business Network International. It could be like a electricians union that you could get involved in. And then how can you deepen your involvement with that organization? And I'm talking like, what I think a lot of people make the mistake of is they join 20 different groups and then they don't attend, or they go as one attendee amongst 100 people or 1,000 people to some event. I don't think that's a great strategy. What I think you should do is actually focus on a handful of organizations and then deepen your involvement with that organization. So maybe you join the board, or maybe you organize an event for them, or maybe you organize a training, or you speak, or something like that. So doing those sorts of things, even if you're in a blue collar job, by first identifying what your goals are, whether it's, you know, adding, getting more clients or customers, or whether it's working your way up the ladder, it starts with that. And then identifying the people, the events, and the organizations that you can involve yourself with, and then starting to do that. And you can also test it over time. So you could take 12 months, say, I'm going to spend 12 months being deepening my involvement in these 2 to 3 groups, and then see if it works. And if it doesn't work, then you try something else at the end of the next year.
Awesome. Do you have any tips? Because you've written about this before, but what are your tips for connecting with VIPs? I mean, let's say on your conversation list, you want to connect with, I don't know, the president of some corporation, some, you know, high profile journalist, a politician. I mean, what are your tips for connecting with those types of people?
Okay. So one of the things that this has been, this is a little controversial sometimes. I have a strategy that I talk about, which is keep it personal, stupid. You've heard of keep it simple, stupid. So this is keep it personal, stupid. So if you have the right opening, the right opportunity, you should look for an opportunity to have a conversation with someone about something having to do with their personal life rather than their vocation. Personally, I find it very boring when I meet someone and we immediately launch into talking just about vocation. It's not a great way to get to know someone better. But you have to look for the opportunity. So you have to wait for someone to open the door. Maybe they mention something, you know, maybe you're at an event and you're talking to someone and they mention, oh, you know, I have to leave in a little bit because I'm going to my daughter's volleyball game. And then that's an opening for you to say, oh, really? Your daughter plays volleyball? What level? College? High school? Take interest in it and then follow up with it. And maybe you have some connection to volleyball that you can follow up with them as well. And I, you know, I'll give an example. Like, I asked an example on social media a couple of months ago. I asked people, what would you say to Oprah if you met Oprah? And it doesn't need to be Oprah. It could be someone else who's of equal accomplishment within your industry. I just use her as an example because she's famous. But if you were to meet Oprah, what would you say to someone who's of that level, that caliber of success? And the types of questions that people responded were these deep, deep questions, like, you know, like, how do I get started in starting my own TV network? And like, how do you publish your own magazine? And how do I break into the TV industry? And, you know, honestly, if I was talking to Oprah Winfrey, I wouldn't talk about any of those things. The handful of things that I know about Oprah Winfrey, which admittedly are not that much, would be that she likes yellow labs. I've read that somewhere. She has a house in Santa Barbara, which is where I went to college, and a few other things. And I'd probably just end up talking about those little personal things because that's so much – it's so much – you're so much more likely to build a personal bond with them. And I'll just tell one quick story about working at the White House. So one of the perks, I guess you can call it, when I worked at the White House – I don't know if they still do this, but the president would record the historic radio address in the Oval Office on weekends, on either Saturday or Sunday morning, and they would invite some VIPs down and employees down to, if you get it on the list, it wasn't a lot of people, down to listen to him record it, and then they do a very quick photo line where you get a picture with the president. And so I did this around the time I was leaving, and my family came in from out of town and in order to do it, because when do you get a picture in the Oval Office? And I'd been given a tip beforehand about that if you want to get a little extra time with him, bring him a gift. And at that time, he was actually – President Clinton was actually collecting DVDs. He was building up his DVD collection, and he liked old Westerns. So we go and get a couple of old Westerns. We put a bow on them. We bring them with us. We go down to the Oval Office. He comes in at the last minute, walks in, records the radio address without a beat, without skipping a beat, and then immediately does the photo line. And they're like members of Congress and like Hollywood directors and famous people and stuff. And everyone's going by really quickly, and they get up to us and we hand over this gift to him. And he immediately looks at it, and then we end up having like a 5-10 minute conversation about old Westerns, about, like, you know, going to see movies as a kid in Arkansas. My dad actually was a TV film critic when I was a kid, so he can talk about movies with anyone. And so we have this, you know, just like a very normal human conversation with the leader of the free world standing in the heart of power in the Oval Office with all these other VIPs behind us waiting in line. And the reason I tell that story is because if you can, if I can have a very personal conversation with the leader of free world in that circumstances, then you can have a very personal conversation about a quote unquote mundane topic with someone who's very successful in your industry, be it a CEO, be it the president of your company, be it a very successful salesperson, whoever it is. Find that commonality, find that thing, old Western movies, whatever it is, find that thing that you can talk about, and then just have a normal human conversation with them. And then that's the way that you start to build the bonds of a relationship.
Awesome. So keep it personal.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it's our last question. It's been a lot of great information here. But what can listeners start doing today? Like, as soon as they get done listening to this podcast, what can they start doing to be a better networker or relationship builder? Excuse me.
I'm not going to live that down, am I?
Yeah. No, well, no, it's a really good way to reframe it. I mean, it's nice. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people like building relationships. They don't like networking, and that's fine. Yeah. You know, I mean, what I would start with is the conversations list strategy that I talked about. You know, taking 20 minutes to sit down and define the 50 people you'd like to either deepen an existing relationship or start a new relationship with, because you haven't met them yet, over the course of the next 12 months, that 20 minutes, and honestly, you don't need to take more than 20 minutes, could take you 15, could save you 20 years of wasted effort. And that's not an exaggeration. So often people do not take the time to decide and to define who are the people who I want to surround myself with, who engage and inspire me, who are the people who I want to be my ideal circle, my ideal network of friends and confidants and people who I can just pick up the phone and talk to a couple of years from now. Who are those people? Define who those people are and then start taking steps over the course of the next few months to start to build those relationships. If it's someone that you know already, then just be sure to remain in touch with them every once in a while. Get together with them for lunch or a drink or coffee or go for a walk or go for a hike or play a pickup basketball game together or whatever. Do whatever it takes to in order to deepen that relationship. I think that's the best thing that you can do to be intentional about building the network that you'd like to have in the future.
Awesome. Well, John Corcoran, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brett.
Our guest today was John Corcoran. He is the owner of smartbusinessrevolution.com. Go check it out. It's a great blog with lots of great, useful information about how to be an effective networker. He also has a great podcast where he talks about how to be a networker, has guests who are experts in that field. If you go there, sign up for his free email newsletter, you'll get a free ebook called Double Your Income by Building Relationships with Influencers, with just jam-packed with information on how to connect with VIPs and influencers who can help you progress in your career. So great ebook, smartbusinessrevolution.com. Go check it out. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you enjoy the podcast, you're getting something out of it, I'd really appreciate it if you would go to iTunes, Stitcher, whatever it is you use to listen to the podcast. Give us a rating. I don't care what it is. Just the more ratings, the better. And it'll get the word out about the show. And also, just to let you know, we have started transcribing our podcasts. So if you want to go back and you're more of a reader, you can go read through all of our past episodes. Just go to artofmanliness.com/category/podcast. You'll have the archives of all of our podcasts, and you'll be able to access the transcripts of all those shows. So that's something else to check out. Until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.